This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All things Packers here. Jordan Love, the running back 2 battle. Who's the wide receiver 1 on this offense? And an early tight end injury. That with Andy Herman here of the Pack a Day podcast, Packer Report over at 247 Sports. And Andy, this is a pretty interesting quarterback 2 battle. It's one that I have my eye on just because we've got a younger, we'll call it veteran, in Sean Clifford. We really haven't seen him much at all. And then Michael Pratt, guy who fell a little bit in the draft based on projections. What have you seen early camp battle here? And an important one, because obviously you're one snap away from being a part of one of the high octane offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, very much so. First of all, thanks so much for having me. Excited to talk Packers with you. The QB2 battle is definitely an interesting one. You know, it's funny, last year they took Sean Clifford fifth round. A lot of people were very confused by the move. Some people didn't think he was a draftable quarterback. I thought he got a little bit of a bad rap. I definitely thought he was draftable. Now, fifth round, sixth round, seventh round, where he should have gone, maybe debatable a bit. But Clifford did a really nice job coming in last year as a fifth round pick, immediately getting the backup job. And, you know, doing a nice job in preseason. He showed off some of the traits that he does possess: his mobility, his arm. I thought for accuracy season and some of the things that he did in his later college career. And then just great leadership and intangibles as well. So he did a pretty nice job coming in. Now, he was never needed last year as a backup quarterback, thankfully, knock on wood, with Jordan Love not getting hurt a season ago. But as you mentioned, that's no guarantee in the NFL. We see by the end of each season, usually there's, 60, 70, some quarterbacks that have played throughout the course of the season. And those backup quarterbacks become very important. Green Bay comes back a year later, and it's almost the exact opposite of the Sean Clifford situation. Clifford taken in the fifth round, everyone's like, wow, he went a lot earlier than we expect. Michael Pratt, they get in the seventh round, and everyone's like, wow, he went a lot later than everyone expected. And it seems like a lot of people think Green Bay really got a steal at that spot. I definitely think that he was, a great get at there in the, right there in the seventh round. We've had two open OTA sessions to the media so far, And both of them have been pretty, snail paced is a one way to utilize it, but like they've been kind of low key practices. At the end of the second one, we finally got into some competitive 2 minute periods that were live, that were 100% speed, and, still no pads or anything like that, but we got a little bit better view. And Michael Pratt did the best actually of all three quarterbacks in his 2 minute drill and drove the team right down the field. And actually would have got the team down to about the 5 yard line had it not been for a drop by his wide receiver on a beautifully thrown corner route that not only would have got him down to the 5, but would have got him out of bounds with time left as well. So it was a really impressive drive, especially for a QB who I'm sure his head is still swimming at this point, trying to learn this offense, who is still trying to gain rapport with these players. Now, of course, he's going against the number 3 defense as well, so that helps in his situation. But overall, I thought he did a really nice job on that drive. His arm is live. You know, he's definitely putting in the time and energy. He's already got the cadence down and things like that. So things are going well. I still think Sean Clifford is the leader in the clubhouse for that opportunity. Just based on having an extra year in the offense, I think is really going to help him. But it should be a really interesting camp battle to kind of keep an eye on.
Yeah, and Michael Pratt has that rushing upside, which I'm really looking for. Sean Clifford's not really going to provide as much of that option. I wanted to know, because he's a seventh round pick there, is Michael Pratt someone, if he loses this battle, is he going to go to the practice squad? Typically, you don't see any quarterbacks of any prominence go there because they might get sniped away. And it probably just means they're not on the trajectory to be any good, frankly, for their current team. Would they keep 3? Kind of, what do you see that? I know it's super early for a roster projection or anything like that, but do you see them keeping 3 active? Or if Pratt loses that, could you see practice squad?
I think if Pratt shows any sort of promise whatsoever, he will be kept as a third quarterback. And, you know, unless Pratt is just out of this world and Clifford takes a step back and Clifford becomes expendable, or Pratt, again, just does not show any promise and does not live up to some of the hype that, again, people expected him to be higher than a seventh round pick. Goody does not enjoy releasing his draft picks, and he really utilizes his 53-man roster, in my opinion, the way that it should be, to make sure you're keeping the 53, you know, best players and the ones that are least likely to get claimed waivers. With the addition of the practice squad call-ups and being able to manipulate your roster through the course of the season in that regard, that, you know, which 53 you actually need for this upcoming week is a little less important because you do have that flexibility there. So my expectation is all three quarterbacks would make the roster this year, barring injury or barring some real major change in either Clifford or Pratt for the positive or for the negative.
Any even bigger names here is at the running back position. We know Josh Jacobs, there's a lot of buzz, you know, the workhorse role. They've obviously paid him to get significant work in this offense and be an all-around do-everything back that they didn't really feel like they've had in recent years with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon comes back. I'd love to know sort of some of the inside, like, were you expecting him to come back? He came back on a really low-level deal, made it feel like the market really wasn't going to be conducive for him getting any more or greater opportunities out there. Then they come back and draft Marshawn Lloyd, who there's a lot of excitement about, looks like a potential lead back if needed, breaking glass there. What do you kind of see the running back two battle, and obviously some positive buzz with Lloyd, but you already know with A.J. Dillon. He's been in the pipeline for quite some time.
Yeah, let's start with Dillon. That's an interesting one. I don't think Green Bay ever expected to have him back, to be quite honest. I think they sort of expected him to get some sort of deal in the open market and probably were not going to re-sign him for any sort of, you know, significant deal whatsoever. That market either A, did not materialize, or B, Dillon just took a massive hometown discount. He does have, you know, roots now here in Green Bay. He married somebody from the Green Bay area who is, again, settled in kind of the Green Bay area. He's, you know, nicknamed the mayor of Door County, which is a county north of Brown County, which is what Green Bay is in. And, you know, he again has a lot of popularity in this area. So I think he probably wanted to stay here, but assume it received any sort of significant contract offer, he would have probably taken that somewhere else. Green Bay utilized a, you know, lesser known contract to bring him back, which basically allows them to pay him $2.575 million this upcoming season on a one-year deal, but only count less than $1.3 million against a salary cap. I think if he demanded a $2.57 million contract in and of himself, and that's what would have counted towards the salary cap, I do not believe he would have been in Green Bay right now. I think he probably would have had to find work elsewhere. But Green Bay literally gets him for basically a vet minimum deal at this point. It's been in the fence for 4 years that, while he may not be the most dynamic guy in the world, definitely provides great pass protection, understands the offense, and usually runs pretty darn well come November, December, January in that Lambeau weather. That seems like a no-brainer as a potential number three pick, not to mention the fact that the only guarantee in this contract is $167,000. So if in some situation or circumstance, somebody like an Emmanuel Wilson comes in and just blows them away, they can keep the younger, cheaper, you know, version, and, you know, that has more years of team control, move on from Dillon and really not have any harm or foul by taking that contract at this point. Goody is a group of giving himself outs. And this is just another one of those great examples of, there's no downside in signing A.J. Dillon to this contract. And if everyone, you know, if he comes back and does what everyone expects him to, he's like an unbelievable hybrid number two, number three back, you know, with Marshawn Lloyd. And if it doesn't work and they find somebody that's better, younger, cheaper, more, you know, more explosive, they can go in that direction and not have any downside on it. So I think that's why he's ultimately back. And again, I think Dillon probably wanted to stay in Green Bay as well. Marshawn Lloyd was, I think, such an unbelievable find in the third round and such a great insurance policy for Josh Jacobs. Going back to last year, Dillon, one of the things with this offense is when Aaron Jones was in, they had that playmaking option at running back at all times. And when Jones was out for the significant period he was out last year, they didn't have that playmaker in the backfield. Like I said, Dillon does a lot of things well, but ripping off 20 plus yard runs is not his jam. That's not his, you know, that's not what he's known for. And just not having that explosive playmaker in the backfield really hurt Green Bay. So clearly they're hoping that Josh Jacobs is going to be able to come in and, you know, hopefully be a bit more durable and be utilized in that capacity, you know, for more snaps than what Jones has been able to give them because of some of the injuries. And then number two, the fact that they have that other explosive guy in Marshawn Lloyd, that even if something happens to Jacobs, or if just Jacobs is out of the game for his, you know, set amount of snaps in every game, they now still have somebody who has that playmaking potential in the backfield. And this offense is just entirely different when they have that option. So I think that's kind of how this current running back group kind of came together.
We've seen this rotation or this battle quite a number of times. You get the mid-career veteran. Maybe there's not a lot of excitement there, but they're a pro. You know, I always use the line, they're a pro and they do a lot of the little things well, which is why, you know, with Dylan, you know, the stop-start ability is not really there. I always say when his legs stop, the play stops. You know, he can't really get back up to a requisite amount of speed. And Marshawn Lloyd's going to have those young legs and that juice, even though he's an older for a rookie. But do you think this is one where a lot of people are going to overstep and say, oh, Marshawn Lloyd's going to be the running back two in week one or week four, and it's going to be more of a slow burn than that? Or can you actually see Lloyd playing well enough as a rookie to get that momentum all the way? In September, we're actually seeing more touches for Lloyd than Dylan in that running back two role.
Yeah, my expectation going in, of course, this can kind of change through the course of training camp and whatnot, but would be that Jacobs is obviously your number one in your bell cow. And I still think they're going to be cautious with him not to make sure that he's not burning out through the course of the season as well. And then I think Dylan and Lloyd's situation is going to be more situational. If it calls for more pass protection, you know, maybe more, you know, want to be a little bit more cautious with Love back there, and Lloyd hasn't picked up that, you know, aspect of the offense, I could see Dylan getting more of those snaps. You know, if it is something that, you know, they need a little bit more, you know, dynamic playmaking ability and somebody who has that ability to take it the distance at any moment, you know, you could see a little bit more of Marshawn Lloyd. So I think it's going to be a situation, you know, or situational specific. But my thought is, I think you could probably see, you know, maybe 8 to 10 or probably like 8 to 9 snaps for Lloyd, 8 to 9 snaps for Dylan, and the rest, you know, go to Jacobs. And that, I think it kind of gets split again based on situational preference of kind of what's going on in the game.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Yeah, it seems like Marshawn Lloyd, the quicker you can pick up that pass pro, the better, because that dynamic nature in the screen game, the dump off game, can really be helpful. Where we saw Dylan, everything kind of dies 5 to 10 yards in a lot of times in those plays. Talk about a journey we've had, a roller coaster ride with Christian Watson's hamstrings here. We've got a lot of information this offseason about imbalance. You know, I actually had an imbalance situation in my body, and it's like, I totally get it now. I can't imagine with hamstrings. He's talking about 20%. Can I get it down to, what is it, 7 or 8%? This has to be the hamstrings heard around the world, since Will Fuller probably is the thing I remember of just hamstrings derailing, and then we see all these flashes. So what's the latest update with Watson that you've seen this offseason? Things are looking looking good right now, but obviously you're a tweak away from we're right back where we started the last 1 to 2 years.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Like, he looks fantastic. He looks bigger, stronger, faster than I even remember seeing him. Like, he looks great. You know, you can just tell. It's always interesting to me when you've got a field full of the best athletes in the world and somebody stands out above and beyond the unbelievable athletes that are on the field, and Christian Watson has that, the size, the speed, the strength, the athleticism. It's all on display at any given moment. Like you said, it doesn't matter if he looks like the greatest Hall of Fame wide receiver ever, which I'm not saying he does, but I'm saying if he did, if he can't stay on the field, it doesn't matter all that much. So that's going to be the challenge for Christian Watson. I think he's got 13 touchdowns in his last 17 regular season games. Like, that's the type of ability that he has to be that playmaker. And again, talking about a guy who can get the ball in his hands and take it the distance at any moment. And they've been creative. They can get it to him on end of rounds, on wide receiver screens, just little drag routes in the middle of the field that he takes it the rest of the way. Like, just having somebody in the offense that has that ability is so important. He also has a gravity to him when he's running those nine routes. Defenses are aware of it. He's dragging defenders his way and safety top because they don't want to get beat by his speed deep, which opens things up for, you know, the Tucker Crafts, the Luke Musgraves, the Dontavian Wickses, the Romeo Dobbs, etc. So his importance on the field cannot be, you know, overstated. And it's just, you know, now can he stay healthy? And I'm happy that they figured out what it was. I think everyone's probably had a situation where they've gone to the doctor with something and they can't figure it out, and that's the most frustrating thing because then you don't know how to fix it. They figured it out. They now know how to fix it. Already cut down the balance in his two legs, and hopefully that leads to stronger hamstrings, a stronger overall season, and hopefully a very healthy season for Christian Watson.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how much that passing game changes when Watson's not in there. You kind of mentioned that gravitational pull that he has and how different he is. You know, everybody else, a little bit more chain moving. Jaden Reed's his own thing, you know, a little Randall Cobb-ish, you know, in terms of what we've seen previously from the Packers. But Watson's, you know, a gazelle out there, you know, 6'3 plus, and a guy that just moves differently, like you said. So is he the clear wide receiver one, you know, in terms of everyone's healthy? They've done so well with their mid-round and late-round drafting of all these guys. It feels like even better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. We saw that run where they got mid-round right all the time. And Packers, it's just such a drove of riches they have right now. So is it Watson clearly going to be that number one guy, as you said, almost averaging a touchdown per game? And then what happens if he is out? We kind of saw some of that in practice last year, but does anything change this year?
Yeah, I think I'll answer that second part first. I think there is some things that change when he's out again. You just don't have there's not another Christian Watson on the roster. However, they do still have playmaking. Bo Melton is a guy that came in, you know, and started to get playing time at the end of last year that has unbelievable speed and can stretch the field. Dontavian Wicks isn't a burner, but he's a great route runner and showed some ability to separate, down the field as well. Romeo Dobbs made a lot of big plays come playoff time. Jaden Reed is still somebody that, even though he's more of that slot sort of gadget guy, he can win down the field as well. So it's not like they're, and even Luke Musgrave up the seam is somebody who can stretch and has a little bit of that gravitational pull in the middle of the field as well. So it's not like they don't have the playmaking or the weapons that they need. They can easily get by without Christian Watson. It just kind of makes everything a little bit tougher because they don't have that pure unadulterated speed with 6'4 height and everything that he can do on the outside. So having him is obviously super advantageous. As far as the first part of that question, I think Green Bay is going to be a little bit different in that. And I know fantasy football owners will hate this, but I think they've got five wide receivers that are going to play, maybe even six with Malik Heath. And I think, you know, the top four are probably going to get the lion's share in Watson, Dobbs, Reed, and Wicks as a round. And one of Matt LaFleur's sort of superpowers is finding mismatches. And even if Watson is your, quote unquote, number one, or if Dobbs is your quote unquote, they're not looking at, well, we need to get the ball to our number one like they had a Davante Adams. They're looking at, all right, what matchup do we have that we can exploit, and it might be their number three wide receiver. It might be, Jaden Reed in the slot. It might be Romeo Dobbs against a smaller, corner. It might be Christian Watson against a slower corner. It might be whatever mismatch there is. It could be Kraft and Musgrave at tight end matched up against smaller corners or slower safeties. Like, it's just, they have an embarrassment of riches that are all unique, different player types. And it's like Goody gave him a little bit of everything at running back, wide receiver, and tight end, and said, we understand what LaFleur is good at. He's great at finding those, mismatches and things that his guys do well that the other team has trouble stopping. And we're just going to spam that. And it was interesting at the end of last year, the first guy that went over 100 yards for the Packers last year as a wide receiver was Bo Melton. And I think Jaden, and that was like week 15. And then I think Jaden Reed did it after that. And I think Dobbs had a week after that. And it was like a different 100-yard receiver every single week. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think it's going to be a different mismatch piece every single week. And whatever guy is the hot hand, whatever one is winning more consistently, and whatever mismatch they can find, that's the guy that's going to be getting the ball the majority of the time. But the other thing too is, like, even in that scenario, they have so many guys that they can rotate in and pick you apart with that I think we're just going to see the ball spread around a ton. And the last thing here is, I think kind of one of the beautiful things is sometimes when you have a guy like Davante Adams, and trust me, all 32 teams want a Davante Adams. I'm not saying they don't, but there is a little bit more of a feel from a quarterback standpoint of like, all right, I got to get this guy involved. And we've seen some of the Stephon Diggs situations. And if that, you know, top wide receiver isn't getting the ball, there sometimes is some angst and frustration. There is none of that on this team. These guys are happy for each other and are celebrating each other when they're the guy for that individual game. And with that, unselfishness becomes a quarterback that doesn't have to go to the line thinking, all right, I got to get the ball to Christian Watson here. I got to get the ball. And you're not force feeding something that maybe isn't there. He's literally going through the progressions, the way that the play is set up for, letting the mismatches win themselves. And then, you know, Jordan Love showed that he can deliver with what he needs to do from a season ago. So I think that's kind of the beauty of this offense right now.
I remember that last year of Rodgers and Adams, it almost felt like what you were just saying. They forced it a little too much. The defense could key on it. They still made a ton of plays, but you just wonder, is it optimized in terms of finding the open guy and scheming? And like you said, almost having just a, we don't care who gets the ball. And now if they go five deep, you're probably in a better position than going one deep and having a lot of questions after that. Tight end. You know, it seems like they got three guys, including a coach right now with a pectoral injury. Tucker Kraft is one of them. I mean, they got to stop these bench press competitions. You know, I know it's a competitive environment there in the off season, but Tucker Kraft, he should be fine. I just want to check with you, should be fine by the time we get critical mass of heading towards week one. But Luke Musgrave is the guy that missed a lot of time last year. Tucker Kraft had that really nice smaller school profile, and we saw that on display as a guy that was ready to step in to the limelight in that starting role last year. What do you kind of expect here? Because they got, again, two good non-first round picks that are contributing early for them, and they have a lot of high expectations for both.
Yeah, two different types of tight. You know, Jordan Love certainly be in this conversation as well, but there's an argument that no player improved more through the course of last season than Tucker Kraft. I mean, some of the stuff early in mini camp OTAs, from especially like a blocking standpoint, you can just tell his head was completely swimming. He took some time to get going. Wasn't a lot of opportunities for him in the first half of the season. And then it sort of came by Musgrave getting hurt that Kraft got, you know, sort of thrown into the lineup a little bit more. My goodness, did he respond? His blocking got so much better as the season went along. His run after the catch ability in college really started to show out in the second half of last season. He was making plays. He's got great hands. His route running got better. He became a very well-rounded tight end by the second half of his rookie year coming out of a small school. So that was so impressive to watch. And then just to kind of go on the injury, it sounds like he's going to be good to go at some point in training camp, may not be right away. I do think he has a little bit of a worse situation than Zach Tom does. Zach Tom's already been kind of doing a little bit of more like rehab stuff and has got his jersey on, whereas Kraft is still in the sling and not doing anything along the sidelines in OTAs right now. So it does seem like it might be a little bit worse and more severe than what Zach Tom's is. But he's going to be a big part of this offense, you know, even if it's not in a spamming numbers sort of way, you know, just what he brings overall, blocking, pass catching, again, some of those mismatches as well. I think he could also get some more H-back stuff with no more Josiah DeGuara. And I don't think Henry Pearson's going to make it as a true fullback on this roster. So they're going to kind of need somebody to do some of that stuff. I think he and Ben Sims are two players that could benefit and get more playing time because they don't have that H-back on the roster. So I think his role could expand this upcoming season. I think we're going to see a lot of two tight end sets. And then that goes for Luke Musgrave as well. I think we really saw him grow a little bit as well. I think one of the things with Musgrave is he's so fast and so tall that sometimes is like, you could tell his body and his mind weren't on the same page. Like he, in a way, he almost needs to slow down to let that speed just kind of, you know, take over naturally. You know, he's almost like trying to do too much and he would get caught stumbling on a few different occasions. And there's a great clip of Matt LaFleur when Musgrave caught a touchdown and, you know, caught a pass and ran it in for a touchdown, where he celebrated in the locker room and said, Musgrave stayed on his feet. And it was like kind of this joke in the locker room that he finally was able to keep his feet underneath him. So I think the game is just slowing down a little bit for him and it's going to come more naturally. The ceiling on him as a red zone threat hasn't even remotely come to fruition yet. And I think that's something that you want to see take a step in year two. I think we saw with Jermichael Finley, you know, in his career that he, you know, sort of became that guy in the red zone that you would put out wide as a 6'6", you know, tight end that they used basically as a wide receiver. And what are you going to do? Are you going to put a corner out there? All right, we're just going to throw a jump ball and let Musgrave go get it. And that's what they did with Finley. Are you going to put a safety out there? All right, we might fake the jump ball and we might, or the fade, and we might go slant. Or if you, you know, we might hit you with a back shoulder fade as well. And it's just no matter if it's a corner, a safety, or, a, you know, heaven forbid, a linebacker, you're just in no man's land no matter what. So I think we could see a little bit more of that from Luke Musgrave as well. So this is a very exciting young two tight end set that I think is only going to get better in 2024, assuming they don't have any more pec injuries or anything, you know, goes awry with the injury situations.
Yeah, God forbid. They do have the latitude to be missing a tight end, be missing a wide receiver, and still be very fine. Obviously, you'd love to see them at full strength for as many games as possible. Andy, I got to ask, more than 2,000 episodes of Pack-A-Day podcast? Is that true?
You're already
rocking towards 3K. Okay.
Yeah, and we've all consecutive as well. Today was episode 2,139. And it's actually, there's actually way more than that because some days there's double episodes and things like that. But it's 2,139 consecutive days of the Pack-A-Day podcast that we've never missed. So yeah, we're coming up on 6 years in July. Incredible team that we have. But yeah, it's been a ton of fun and a really fun journey over these past 6 years.
Officially, we can call you the Cal Ripken of covering NFL teams, covering the Green Bay Packers, because Cal Ripken, you're in trouble. I don't even know what his exact number is, but you're near there and you're going to surpass him by all expectations. Because you know what? Probable, questionable, doubtful. Andy's showing up. That's what I know.
Love it. Yeah.
6 years and of data points here.
And thankfully, too, I have an incredible podcast team. So if I do have to miss a day here, there, they're you know, always able to fill in. And, you know, like I said, it's just been such a collaborative effort and the whole team does such a tremendous job. And as good as they are as Packers podcasters, they're even better people, which is kind of the cool part as well.
Absolutely. Andy Herman, thank you so much for sharing your time and talents. What are a couple things that you would highlight, whether it's Pack-A-Day, whether it's something else that either has come out since the draft or you have in the plans as we burn towards week one?
Yeah, no, nothing in particular. Just check out the Pack-A-Day podcast. As we mentioned, 365 days a year. You can find it wherever you get your favorite podcasts and, of course, over on YouTube as well. Yeah, love talking Packers every single day. Never gets old. And we know that the NFL is a 365 day a year product. And we know Packer fans have an insatiable thirst for content. So make sure to check it out wherever you find, again, your favorite podcasts or on YouTube at Pack-A-Day Podcasts.
Excellent. Andy Herman coming on the show, talking all things Packers. I'm Chad Parsons. Until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.